This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 13th of January 2023. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 12th of January 2023. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are relief as recycling plan turned down, new laptops for junior school, and post office to shut up shop. So we will start with the story behind the first headline.
Relief, as recycling plan turned down. Civic chiefs have refused a controversial plan to double the operation of a recycling plant near Kingsworthy. The decision was met by a round of applause from around 30 residents. EcoGen Recycling Limited in Stoke Charity Road wanted to increase the number of lorry movements, resulting in 80 HGVs going through Kingsworthy. Hampshire County Council Regulatory Committee debated the proposal yesterday and heard from local residents and the applicant. The council's officers recommended that the plan be refused based on the potential disturbance the increased lorries could cause to nearby residents. Currently, EcoGen is allowed to handle 30,000 tonnes of waste each year and is restricted to 40 HGV movements per day, 20 in and 20 out. But it wanted the council to alter these conditions to allow it to import 60,000 tonnes of waste and double HGV movements. A total of 264 comments were received, 8 of which were in support. A petition with 1,006 signatures was also received. 7 residents spoke to the committee objecting to the plan. Each resident was met with a round of applause by members of the public. 3 people spoke in support. Steve Waters and Sine Biddle spoke for Kingsworthy Parish Council. Mr. Waters, a retired police traffic officer, said, "As residents, we have been blighted by the HGVs. If the lorries meet, they don't have enough space to pass. They have to mount the curb. Road users may find it unsafe if increasing lorries use Loveden Lane. This is completely unacceptable. I plead with you to refuse this application." Andy Key from Cycle Winchester said, "This is a major cycling route. Local groups and individuals use it for exercise and leisure during the week. It is important for public health." However, Steve Webster, who lives next to the site and shares an entrance with it, backed the plan. In support of the proposal, he said, "EcoGen are good neighbours. They regularly share information with us and we have no problem with them. We are not impacted by noise. It does not disturb us. Horses get used to the lorries. They don't take any notice of them." Dr. Simon Ellen, the chief executive of the Recycling Association, told the committee that the site was crucial for the increased demand on resources. However, he also said that he's not a local resident. Councillor Jackie Porter spoke to the committee and agreed with the reasons for refusal. The committee's chairman, Councillor Peter Latham, said, "On balance, I support the recommendations to refuse. But nothing will change. Lorries will still drive through the area. We have to recycle 1 million tonnes of waste per year by 2030. We are nowhere close to that. However, noise is an acceptable reason to refuse. The committee agreed to refuse the changes with 12 votes for, none against, and 3 abstentions.
New laptops for junior school. New laptops have been given to school children in Bishop's Waltham thanks to volunteer fundraising. Bishop's Waltham Junior School pupils were given 64 Chromebooks after £15,000 was raised by a parent volunteer group. The Friends of Bishop's Waltham Junior School held various fundraising events, including a fireworks display, Christmas fair, and summer barbecue. Head teacher Darren Campbell said, "The Chromebooks have been set up and classes have already begun using them. As a school, we are lucky to have such a committed group of parent volunteers who give their time to organise fundraising events for the school. In recent months, there has been the community fireworks event and the Christmas fair, both of which were a tremendous success. The pupils on the school council had requested extra computing devices during a meeting at the beginning of the school year, so it's lovely to see this agreed upon by the FOBS team."
Post office to shut up shop. A post office near Winchester will be closing due to the owners of 23 years retiring and no one else stepping forward to take it over. Kingsworthy Post Office and Shop has been open near the Cart and Horses Junction since 1974, but will now close at the end of this month. The unit has been on the market for the past 6 months, but with no interest. Owners B.K. Kaur and his wife, Sangeeta, have been forced to close as they prepare for retirement after working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 23 years. Mr. Kaur says, "We feel like we've put in our time. It's mixed emotions. I feel sad to an extent, but at the same time I look forward to retiring. I haven't been on holiday in forever, and it will be nice to have no commitments, not be bound to anything, and have time to myself without the worries of the post office. In the current climate, it'll be hard to replace the post office. Costs have increased, and we weren't able to find enough staff to deliver newspapers. No one wants to take it on, so we've been forced to close. Our customers are very sympathetic and understanding that we have given our time. They fully understand that. Mr. Kaur and his wife will continue to live above the post office until the unit is sold. An advertisement remains in the window. From January the 31st, the nearest outlet will be just over a mile away in Springvale. The post office's network provision lead, Graham Brander, addressed a letter to reassure customers that they are trying to replace the service and that the vacancy is still being advertised. The letter read, "We are currently investigating the options available which will enable us to reinstate a post office service to the local community." Councillor Jane Rutter said, "We're pleased that the post office is working hard to find new takers for the business. I know that it was marketed for a few months as a going concern, but that has not had any takers yet. The closure follows a very delayed decision to retire by the current postmasters, who've given long and faithful service to the community over many years, and the love and respect in which they are held is demonstrated by the sum which is being raised for their retirement through the donation site set up by Liz Kavanagh. So far, the fundraiser organised by Liz Kavanagh of Winchester Magazine has raised more than £1,700 from nearly 70 people.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Allen, Gillian Philomena Allen, at Brendon Care, Otterbourne Hill, on the 25th of December, aged 81. Booth, Jonathan Patrick, on the 26th of December, aged 49. Childs, Susan Childs, at home on the 4th of January, aged 79. Edwards, Bernard John Edwards, on the 13th of December, aged 89. Elliot, Sydney Robert Elliot, known as Sid, formerly of Swanmore, on the 25th of December at his care home residence in Bishop Auckland. Felton, Dorothy Mary Felton, née Oakes, at Gosport War Memorial Hospital on the 21st of December, aged 92. Goldie, Rose Goldie, at West Home on the 26th of December, aged 95. Hall, Vivian Moira Hall, née Jubb, at home in Alsford on the 4th of January, aged 72. Hibbard, Ken Hibbard, at home on the 25th of December, aged 90. Hill, James Richard Ledger Hill, on the 4th of January. Kitcher, Terry Sidney Kitcher, of Woolston, on the 31st of December, aged 81. Moreau, Anne Moreau, née Will, known as Annie, at home in Alsford on the 8th of January. Protheroe, David Paul Protheroe, at Winchester Hospice on the 30th of December, aged 58. Scott, Jennifer Carol Scott, nay Maybe, on the 31st of December, aged 79. Simpson, Eileen Simpson, nay Payne, on the 17th of December at Westacre Nursing Home, aged 88. Sumner, Sylvia Ada May Sumner, on the 23rd of December, aged 86. Taylor, Neil Taylor, on the 31st of December, aged 86. Taylor, Anthony Wilfred Taylor, on the 19th of December, aged 92. And next we have Christian comment.
Christian comment in this one is by Rosemary A. Baker, entitled 250 Years of Amazing Grace. So, we are entering a new year. I could write about New Year resolutions or even Epiphany, the church season we are now in, but I think I have a better idea, but can't claim it is something I thought of myself, as other articles and songs of praise have featured it. Apparently, John Newton wrote the hymn Amazing Grace on January the 1st, 1773, 250 years ago. This hymn has, throughout the years since then, often been the cause of new revelation in people's faith journeys, indeed of new beginnings for many as they were converted to Christianity by its words. Many of us are familiar with the story of John Newton, who, as a seaman and captain of a ship carrying slaves, was caught in a dreadful storm. Newton called out to God to save them, and indeed they were saved. This was the beginning of his conversion, leading to his eventual ordination as a priest in the Church of England. He became a curate in the town of Olney in Buckinghamshire, where he wrote many hymns. Amazing Grace was written towards the end of 1772. His diary entry for January the 1st, 1773, reads, I preached this forenoon from Chronicles chapter 17, verses 16 to 17. Amazing Grace is an exposition and application of that passage of scriptures. I have to confess to not knowing this, and regrettably not all that familiar with this Old Testament book. King David was embarrassed at being in a palace made of cedar, while the Ark of the Covenant, the sacred Jewish scriptures, was housed in a tent. He promises, because God has been good to him, despite all his wrongdoings, to build a suitable temple. Newton says we should meditate on this passage as we enter a new year, a consideration of past mercies and future hopes. During his time at Olney, Newton collaborated with a friend, William Cowper, and together they published the Olney Hymns. Cowper's best-known hymns include God Moves in a Mysterious Way, Oh, for a Closer Walk with God, and Hark, My Soul, It is the Lord. Cowper, it is thought, was a manic depressive. I find it fascinating that someone who experienced such periods of darkness could still write such words that bring comfort to others. John Newton wrote many other hymns beside Amazing Grace. Some of the best known are Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken and How Sweet the Name of Jesus Sounds. His hymns, like those of Cowper, have been very helpful to many people. They were both involved in the campaign to abolish slavery in this country. Newton called on his congregation to meditate on the words of Amazing Grace at the beginning of the new year, a spiritual check-up, if you like. We could do the same with the words of this hymn or some other as we consider past mercies and future hopes. And that was by Rosemary A. Baker.
Next, we have letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've 9 letters today on a variety of topics, and we'll start with the first one,
which is a letter from Reverend Paul Anthony Newman, and it's entitled Controversial Fencing Fine by Me. You report in the Chronicle December the 29th that no objections have been made so far to the intended replacement of the present fencing near Winchester train station, which is less than 3 years old. I might not object, but have questions requiring answers. Beyond the alleged procedural oversight by Network Rail failing to obtain planning permission for the present fences, what is or was controversial about them? They are entirely effective preventions against the throwing of objects or indeed bodies onto the railway below. In my view, as a regular user, they are not unattractive in their green rendering and afford visibility in both directions. If, as I maintain, there is neither aesthetic nor utilitarian deficiency in the existing fences, what exactly are the envisioned improvements justifying a replacement? What might be the opportunity costs in personnel deployment and duration, and materials cost of such an unnecessary and wasteful project? That letter is from Reverend Paul Anthony Newman, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Roger Stevens, and it's entitled Tory Shame. Messrs Rees, Smith and Shea have made a vigorous defence of the Labour Party's parliamentary record in response to Mr Hargreaves' letter, Labour Pains, in the Chronicle on December the 22nd. However, Mr Hargreaves has cleverly directed criticism at the Labour Party in a bid to divert our attention from the shambles that is present-day Tory Britain. After 12 years of Tory rule, Britain today is Toryland. Our runaway inflation is Tory runaway inflation. The strikes in our public services are Tory strikes in our public services. The raw sewage in our rivers and on our beaches is Tory raw sewage. And the energy crisis is a Tory energy crisis. All of these are the result of 12 years of Tory bumbling along. We have enough tidal energy around our shores to provide electricity for ourselves and half of Europe. Yet all this goes to waste. While the Tories have bumbled us into a situation where global Britain is reliant upon alien, potentially and actually hostile powers for its energy lifeblood. If the Tories were human enough to feel shame, they'd be ashamed that they've brought us to a situation where so many depend on food banks and children are sent to school with empty lunchboxes. The Tories would say that their parents are to blame for making the wrong life choices. In response to that, I would reply, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak. It is true that Mr. Sunak is not actually insane, but his American green card and his wife's non-dom tax arrangements show us what side he is on, and it is not ours. Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
Missing buses. And this is a letter from Dr. Harry Mycock. What happened to the Winchester King City buses run by Stagecoach? During the pandemic, they seemed to disappear in favour of the standard Stagecoach livery. I felt that the King City livery buses added something to the city. With elegant and somewhat regal colouring, the buses stood out, and the image of King Alfred emphasised the importance of the only English king designated as Great, who sits at the heart of Winchester's history. The slogan on the side of the buses read, "The King's City, where Alfred ruled a kingdom." This provided a message to visitors to understand the reason for the livery and the historical importance of Winchester. The map on the back of the buses and the line of frequent services into the heart of Winchester spoke well to encourage bus use in the city. I liked the King City buses and their role in helping promote our often undersold city. Any ideas what happened to the buses? And any chance they could make a comeback? And that is from Dr. Harry Mycock, Quarry Road, Winchester.
G.N. Barrett writes about NHS needs. The NHS is forever moaning that there are so many hold-ups from ambulances to beds, and of course staff. It is not surprising. For the last decade or more, we have seen hospital closures, A&Es closed and centralised to new hospitals. This, as we the public know, causes congestion. Therefore, Bushfield campsite should be for the NHS to build a brand new up-to-date hospital to help ease the pressure and, of course, ease the congestion on the future. As things are now, the public will not be able to get to Bushfield, nor will they have any monies left for needy requirements. Think of the public, not enrich the wealthy. That letter is from G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
The next letter is from Jeremy Pierce, and it's entitled Labour Gains. Where has Peter Hargreaves been for the last 12 years? He rambles on about Labour's past failings without any reference to the total shambles of this Tory government since 2010 in his letter to the Chronicle on December the 22nd. Is he blind to the incompetence and dishonesty of the bombastic Boris Johnson, the disastrous brief leadership of Liz Truss, the bullying allegations against ministers like Gavin Williamson, Priti Patel and Dominic Raab? It makes for a wholly unedifying reign in power. Good riddance to the lot of them. As the public opinion suggests, Labour will be returned at the next election. I've never voted for Labour in my life, but I'm absolutely convinced that they will improve the prospects of this country. They could hardly do worse than the useless outfit currently in charge. Jeremy Pierce, Parchment Street, Winchester.
And this letter is entitled The Right Treatment, and it comes from Malcolm Clark. Having read the recent letter about the doctor who expressed concern about antibiotics being in short supply, I do wonder whether for everyone who's given them, it is the best possible solution. Usually, once a year, I develop a cough, which is untypical of the standard cough, and as a result, other people are often incorrect in selecting remedies for it. This time, I was given two sets of antibiotics for it, one of which was the one the doctor, writing to this paper, lamented the absence of. The only previous time in my life I had taken antibiotics was in 2007 for an unrelated condition. This time I took the full course of antibiotics as recommended. But after I'd done so, the cough was no better, and it was worse after the first couple of days. My gut feeling was that the antibiotics did not complement the working of my immune system very well, and it seemed that the cough began to recede when I started to push myself to do things. I am a great believer in the words of The Sound of Music. When I remember my favourite things, I don't feel so bad. And keeping in mind body and spirit in harmony. In these difficult times, I do think it's important that people are given the most appropriate treatment for their symptoms and that patients are listened to, even though I appreciate the pressure that doctors are under at the moment. And this is from Malcolm Clark, Lee Road, Eastleigh.
Help for Harry, writes Dr. Tony Saunders, who is a retired child psychiatrist. I read that Ben McBean, war veteran and close friend to Prince Harry, has told Harry to shut up and suggests that if he were hanging around with good people, they would have told him to stop. What good advice! What Harry needs is someone with common sense whom he trusts. Queen Camilla has suffered negative press and public condemnation in the past, but has weathered it all. I think she would be able to offer sound advice and support and be a go-between with other members of the royal family. I think it could work well if they both agreed, but that might be too big an if. That's from Dr. Tony Saunders, retired child psychiatrist, Meadow Cottage, Otterbourne.
And the next letter is from Johnny Bucknell, and he calls it Healthy Sewage. I suggest that if your journalist, Gemma Cullum, is going to write about sewage matters, she gets up to speed on sewage discharges, which are politically sensitive at the moment. For some bizarre reason, I take an interest in these matters. The Chronicle, January the 5th. This article on the internet caught my eye. There are basically two types of sewage discharge. The first is when a sewage works breaks down and raw sewage is discharged into a waterway or the sea. This is pretty grim. It deoxygenates the water and kills fish. It's normally repaired in a few hours and the waterway quickly returns to normal. The second is when a combined sewage outfall discharges in very heavy rainfall. This is 98% rainwater. There's no research into the effects of these, but it could be like putting fertiliser on fields, since all aquatic animals secrete their own sewage. Plankton thrives on sewage. This manhole looked like the latter, because it only overflows in the rain. It was not an environmental disaster, as stated, and might even have promoted the growth of fish. Since COVID, people have become obsessed with sewage. Your grumpy and paranoid readers would be astounded to find out that those who work in the sewage industry are the healthiest of most workers. This is because of constant exposure to bugs that gives a person an excellent immune system. Johnny Bucknell, Chamberlain Street, London.
This letter is entitled Inspiring Builders, and it comes from Judith Martin. As far as I know, it's still the case that when a contentious planning application is up for discussion, officers tell councillors that to turn it down would risk an appeal, and that would cost too much money. In that way, a lot of horrors get through. Why, though, did councillors want to refuse the striking new house that has now been allowed on appeal? Inspirational floating house gets go-ahead after appeal. Chronicle, page 14, January the 5th. The article describes it as a paragraph 80 house, after the policy in the National Planning Policy Framework that allows houses to be built in the countryside where they would not otherwise be permitted if they are of exceptional architectural and landscape quality. This legislation had its origins in the 1997 legislation, a last gasp of Conservative government planning, that was said to be intended to allow development by the swathes of very rich Hong Kong Chinese who would come here following the handover of the island by the UK government to China. In fact, very little was built at the time, and the legislation was diluted by the incoming Labour government. But it resurfaced in the coalition government's NPPF in 2012. So the ability to have, as originally stated, a new generation of country houses to match those of earlier centuries has continued through the leadership of each main political party. As the climate emergency, which both WCC and HCC have signed up to combating, ensures more flooding and extreme weather, the ability to build floating dwellings seems a useful one. The Dutch have been doing it for ages, but the UK goes on allowing development on floodplains instead, producing exactly the opposite result. I don't know if the Water Lily House will ever be a public attraction, like Mottisfont, say. It will have to be given to the public via the National Trust first. But if it inspires architects and developers to think harder about future-proofing their buildings, that would be a benefit. Meanwhile, I wonder how much cash-strapped WCC spent defending their refusal in court. And this is from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Next, we have Chronicle comment, which will be followed by letter from Westminster and then first person.
So then, editorial comment, which this week is entitled Where to Put New Recycling Plants. The issue of the recycling centre near Kingsworthy is truly one for the 21st century. EcoGen Recycling Limited in Stoke Charity Road had been seeking permission to double the number of lorry movements, resulting in 80 HGVs going through Kingsworthy daily. EcoGen's reason is the increasing workload as a result of the needs of the modern day economy. The County Council Regulatory Committee yesterday rejected the proposal because of the impact on local residents. The issue is, where are these vital facilities going to go? Farms are often chosen, providing relatively cheap spaces, but they are often, as in this case, on inadequate roads. The ideal location would be land close to major roads, but prices are usually higher. It will never happen, but Bushfield Camp would have been more than suitable. The landowner, the church commissioners, has other more upmarket ideas for the old army base. So, what about the seemingly underused Winnell Industrial Estate?
And now we have Letter from Westminster, which is, of course, written by Flick Drummond. I hope everyone was able to enjoy time over Christmas and the New Year with family and friends. I managed to get a few days away with my husband. Parliament returned this week after the recess. The return comes following the Prime Minister unveiling five pledges to help get the country back on track and deal with the issues it faces on several fronts. Halving inflation is the key pledge. There are signs many prices are starting to fall, and this is welcome. But if inflation is not going to be baked into the UK economy, then wage restraint is needed. I support the government's position on wage demands in the public sector. The rail unions have been given a good deal, but they do not want to undertake reform of working practices. The railways have not recovered from the pandemic. Many more work from home now, and unless there is reform, the rail network will struggle and the taxpayer will continue to pay £2 billion a year to meet the shortfall. I don't think it's unreasonable to look to have a leaner, more flexible railway, able to entice passengers back on board. With regard to nurses, I would like to see a deal that recognises the vital work they do. However, 19% is too much and we cannot afford it. I hope the Royal College of Nursing will compromise. The NHS remains a huge concern with too many patients waiting for treatment and beds, while bed blocking continues to be an issue. I believe the government and NHS managers are getting to grips with the challenges born of the pandemic and flu and COVID cases. It is important Rishi Sunak made the pledge to see waiting lists fall and people get the care they need more quickly. Another announcement from the PM was that everyone will study maths until they're 18. Education is one of my passions and I support this. Numeracy is an issue in the UK and more lessons in it will help individuals and the country. It's an investment in our future. However, this does not mean that everyone will be tied to a desk learning trigonometry. Some of the focus will be on practical maths to help people understand things such as APR or compound interest or percentages, all valuable skills. There's been a very welcome focus on education since the new PM took over. There is no greater building block for a country's prosperity than good education. There is no bigger lever we can pull to take people out of poverty than good education. Billions more is going into the school's budget over the next 2 years. The PM is proving to be straight-talking and fully aware and able to address the challenges we face. This year will be tough, but I think we will see improvements. We have much to be thankful for. The pandemic is behind us due to the brilliant vaccine programme, and we live in a country at peace. Like many, my thoughts and prayers are with Ukraine and its people over the festive period. Many there spent it underground without heating or light. The UK should be very proud of its support for Ukraine. It will continue until Putin's forces are thrown out. Flick Drummond, MP, Member of Parliament for Meon Valley.
This is an article by George Hayter entitled My Foolproof Party Tips. Dull is the word to describe the several flops that I have invited my unfortunate friends and relations to. So last month it was a surprise when I found myself hosting a party that was going rather well. All our new neighbours came, and once they'd got a drink in them, they zoomed into party liftoff. I had laid on background music, but the alcohol-fuelled throng was soon jabbering away so loudly that my carefully selected instrumental mix was drowned out. I like to think it was my charismatic welcome at the door that propelled the guests into wild abandon that night. But I think it may have been more to do with my wife making sure they all had a drink as soon as their coats were off. Also crucial, I think, were advanced planning, taking round invitations, arranging furniture, and meticulous preparation of canapes, etc. Fortunately, my wife took care of all of this, apart from deciding where to place the bowls of crisps. That was where my expertise came in. I had a whale of a time at the party, by my timid standards. I didn't spill anything, fall over, or accidentally insult anybody. I showed people round the house and pointed out paintings I'd bought or painted myself, and I proudly produced a book I wrote years ago. After my showing off, victims have lost interest in the boring book and gone back to having a good time. I went back to offering round the peanuts. Time and again I topped everybody up, poking the bottle spout into the glass while they carried on with their deafening banter. All those carefree neighbours we'd invited were getting on like a house on fire. I didn't like to interrupt. I noticed that my wife had joined in with the hilarity while I played a modest supporting role. I found myself literally a dumb waiter. At the end, there was no let-up in jokes and laughter as a stampede developed. The jolly guests were all heading for the door. As their jolly laughter faded into the night outside, I mused over what had made the party go so well. I think my cork skills were key. It's vital to master gold foil and that stiff wire mesh, as well as the cork itself. Hampshire partygoers will tolerate any incompetence, apart from the inability to open a bottle. As well as peanuts and crisps in situ at the start, after an hour, it's good to take round nibbles, possibly involving cheese or olives or crudités, and a trough of mysterious primeval dip. Make sure you buy the cheapest booze. Anybody who knows anything about wine knows that the more expensive it is, the worse the wine tastes. The main thing is a posh-looking label. Of course, there's no need to buy more than just one bottle of wine, or even any wine at all. People always bring their own. If they don't, say you're going to the cellar and nip round to the offie. Now, tips just for awkward blunderers and gauche conversationists like me. Don't be tempted to announce a musical interlude, as I once did. Take it from me, unless you're charming or famous, your five verses of Amazing Grace will have the same effect as a fire alarm. However thoroughly you think you've mastered your three guitar chords. Another tip, don't mention drains. I brought up drains and people overheard. The party fell silent. All turned incredulously to witness my mirthless conversation about the blockage in our sink waste pipe. It developed into an argument about the best U-bend length. It was an anxious 15 minutes, but eventually I think drains were forgotten and the party resumed. In the light of the drains interlude, my final party-throwing advice is it's useful to play safe option for ungainly hosts like me. Don't say anything. Just fill their glasses.
There are no special announcements this week. Sunrise this time of year is around 8 o'clock in the morning, and sunset is around 4:30 in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
City bus fares capped at £2. A bus company is encouraging passengers in Winchester and Rumsey to get around for £2, with capped bus fares for the first 3 months of 2023. To kick-start 2023, Stagecoach has introduced £2 bus fares for single journeys and is urging Winchester passengers to make the most of a deal with a trip to Rumsey or Alton. The capped prices are available until the end of March as part of the Department for Transport's new fares initiative under the government's Help for Households campaign to ease financial pressures. Stagecoach hopes residents will leave their cars at home with the new initiative designed to save money compared to the cost of petrol. The scheme also aims to benefit the environment, with one full double-decker bus taking more than 70 cars off the road. Managing Director for Stagecoach South, Gordon Frost, said, "We are pleased that this initiative is now live, which will help so many people at a time where money needs to stretch further, and at the same time aims to reduce car use and encourage people onto more sustainable public transport. We already offer some of the lowest ticket prices in the country, with daily travel under £3. We hope that this new promotion helps more people to get on board with us and continue benefiting from our value for money tickets after the government scheme has ended. The scheme means all adult, concession and child single tickets on eligible routes will be capped to £2, with any single tickets previously cheaper than this remaining the same price. The cap applies to all journeys with some exceptions such as night buses."
Penguins get the all clear. Penguins at Marwell Zoo will return to their enclosure after being given the all clear for avian influenza. Precautionary action was taken by the zoo near Winchester to protect the 7 penguins. This came after 8 penguins died amidst an outbreak in December. 4 died from the disease, while a further 4 tested positive and by law had to be euthanised. Since then, the remaining 7 penguins have all tested negative for the disease, and the zoo is preparing to return them to their enclosure, along with the centre's flamingo population. The flamingos also all tested negative for bird flu. Access to walk-through aviaries and the tropical house will continue to be restricted while the zoo works to keep the animals safe. Marwell Zoo worked closely with the Animal and Plant Health Agency and the Department of the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs after the outbreak. A spokesman for Marwell Zoo said it is delighted at the swift containment of the outbreak. We added, "The penguins can be reintroduced to their pool and enclosure once we are given the all clear to do so. Our flamingos have now been given access to the whole of their enclosure again, and we are working with the relevant authorities to get the penguins back in their enclosure as soon as possible. To meet the regulations, the zoo must implement a stringent programme of further cleaning and disinfection. It anticipates this will take until mid to late January at the earliest."
Marathon team powered through the holiday season. A challenge dedicated to a marathon runner who died of cancer has raised more than £40,000. More than 250 people pledged to exercise for 30 minutes a day throughout December, even on Christmas Day, as part of the 2022 Tinathon Challenge. Since 2019, Tinathoners have raised more than £40,000 for Winchester Hospice and Wessex Cancer Trust, with £10,000 being made in December 2022 challenge. The fundraiser was launched as a tribute to Tina Jury, a local runner who completed more than 100 marathons, even while undergoing chemotherapy. Participants paid an entry fee and could choose whatever activity they wanted, as long as it raised their heart rate for at least half an hour. Any day missed meant a fine had to be paid to the charities. Tinnersonners, wearing their branded buffs supplied by Alexandra Sports, were seen out running, swimming, cycling, power walking, and going to the gym. On one night, the fitness fundraisers also accompanied Winchester Rotary Club's Santa Sleigh. The challenge was created by two of Tina's friends, local PR Miranda Rocksmith and personal trainer Heather Terry, who got Tina's friends and family on board to take part. This year, as word has spread of the challenge, there were participants from across the UK and in America, Canada, New Zealand, Norway and Sweden. Mary Needham of Munch CIC provided healthy recipes, and Sarah Crudgington of Clove Fitness offered sports massages. Many of the group came together on the final day at Winchester's Park Run, led by James White, and a special outdoor HIIT class led by Challenge co-founder Heather. Miranda Rocksmith said some were back for a fourth consecutive year, while others were joining in for the first time. It's a wonderful legacy to Tina, and we love organising Tinathon. Heather Terry said, "We always feel warmed by hearing the stories of how getting out every day and exercising throughout December really helps support people mentally as well as physically. A huge thank you to all our PTs and gyms who helped to make this happen."
Burst pipe forces preschool to close. A preschool has been forced to close permanently after the building and equipment was destroyed beyond recovery. Stepping Stones Preschool in Winnell announced its closure on Wednesday, January the 4th, advising parents to find a new preschool. The damage was caused by flooding over Christmas due to a burst water pipe. In a letter addressed to parents, the preschool said, "It is with regret and sadness that we are writing to inform you of the permanent closure of Stepping Stones Preschool, Winnell, Winchester. The recent flooding has caused damage to not only the building, but most of our equipment and some furniture, leaving us in a situation we are unable to recover from. As always, our staff remain grateful for your kind words and support throughout this difficult time. It has been a pleasure to be a part of and serve the local community of Winnell for the past 10 years. The preschool looked after around 20 children aged 2 to 4 and received an outstanding rating in its last Ofsted inspection in 2018. The building is based on the same grounds as Winnell Primary School in Garbett Road.
Frank 100 puts long life down to lunchtime beer. A Winchester care home resident celebrated his 100th birthday with the help of his family and friends, royalty, and a pint at his local pub. Frank Davis turned 100 in style with 2 days of celebrations to mark the milestone. First was a birthday party at Frank's home at Signature at Winchester alongside his family, where they were treated to a three-course meal prepared by the care home's catering team. On Mr. Davis's actual birthday, he was whisked off to the pub by activities assistant Zoe Willett, who granted his wish for a crisp birthday pint. Zoe said it was a wonderful day. Frank has always loved a trip to the pub, so it was extra special to take him for a pint on his 100th birthday. He's a lovely man and always a pleasure to be around. We had a really fun afternoon celebrating his birthday. The former engineer said, I feel lucky to be 100, though it's not really much different to being 99. My secret is to always try and have a glass of beer with lunch. Returning to the nursing home, the birthday boy was greeted by his fellow residents and the other team members at Signature at Winchester. The 100-year-old also received a personalised mug and a much-anticipated letter from King Charles III. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Frank sitting with a large mug in his hand, possibly of beer, a larger 100th birthday card, which may be the royal one, it's got a crown on it, and an extremely large birthday cake.
Vintage bus finally makes it back home to Hampshire. A Winchester Heritage bus group has taken ownership of a fully restored Leyland Lion single-deck bus built in 1929. Friends of King Alfred Buses got the vintage bus thanks to a benefactor who wishes to remain anonymous. The vehicle was in the first fleet of Hanson Dorset Moser services, H&D, from 1929 until 1948, and is believed to be the only operational pre-war H&D bus still in existence. Since 2003, it has been based at the Scottish Vintage Bus Museum, where its previous owners, the late Douglas Schuller and his son Ross, had rebuilt the vehicle. It is now to return to its original home in Hampshire. The bus is being repainted into the green and ivory livery of King Alfred Motor Services, but the long-term plan is to restore it to its original H&D condition in time for its centenary in 2029. King Alfred owned two very similar Leyland Lions, so now can demonstrate what these buses looked, sounded and felt like. This one survived because it became a motor caravan for almost 20 years before being found and rescued in 1967, going initially to the West of England Transport Collection at Winkley in Devon. In Winchester, it will join FOKAB's other two pre-war vehicles, the well-known Dennis, 30 hundredweight 18-seater of 1931, owned for over 30 years, and the recently reinvigorated 1935 Albion Victor 20-seater coach as part of the King Alfred fleet. It is expected to be the star attraction at the original King Alfred's running day, based on Winchester Broadway on Bank Holiday Monday, May the 1st.
Battle heats up to stop River Park sale. Hampshire Gardens Trust has joined the campaign to stop the disposal of the River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester. The City Council proposes to transfer the building and some of the surrounding land on a long lease to Southampton University. An action group called the Friends of River Park is taking legal action to stop the disposal. Now in its latest newsletter, the Gardens Trust has criticised the City Council. Its concerns include the loss of public open space, the impact on the nearby Winnall Moors Nature Reserve, and the proposals, despite a covenant in 1902, which gifted the site to the City Council for use by the public. Ted Wake, Chairman, and Janet Hurrell, Senior Member, state, "If WCC is allowed to proceed with their plan, they will hand over control of the building and surrounding land that currently forms a vital part of the city's main green artery, running from Winnall Moors Nature Reserve to St Cross. Whilst we all sympathise with the council, which has the responsibility of repurposing the site, It is hard to understand why WCC has taken such a short-term view that could permanently scar this crucial element of the city's green space and denies residents and visitors access to that part of the park in future. The Trust has already sent in comments to Winchester City Council reflecting our concerns for allowing the sale of this priceless public asset, it being one of the key characteristics which make Winchester such a civilised location, with green arteries running through its centre and access to the countryside beyond. Finally, we also believe that it is a duty of a charity such as ours to draw attention to covenants that were put in place by previous generations, who thankfully had the foresight to protect urban green spaces and to highlight our support for the tenets held by the fields in trust regarding such valued spaces. Ultimately, it is up to you as individuals to decide whether you are comfortable with what is happening within the currently public recreation ground in Winchester or not. And if you are concerned, please do look at the Friends of River Park website, which in fact is www.riverparkwinchester.org. That's www.riverparkwinchester.org.
Warm space free of charge. A social group in Winchester has announced that it will be opening a warm space to offer support to people in need. MHA Communities Winchester will be operating the warm space out of Room 1 at the United Church on Jewellery Street. The space will be open from 12 noon to 3:30 p.m. and will be available free of charge to anyone over the age of 60, regardless of whether they're a member of MHA Communities Winchester. The space will not only be warm and welcoming, but will also offer an opportunity for visitors to socialise and relax with a hot drink and light snacks. Access to information and signposting regarding benefits, other local services and support options will also be provided. Transport will be provided to those who are unable to reach the church via public transport due to geography, cost or accessibility needs. Visitors will have access to games, reading material and Wi-Fi, as well as support with IT access should it be required. The warm space will be open weekly until the end of March, and more information can be found by calling 01962 890995.
College staff latest to take strike action. 3 days of strikes at colleges took place this week as staff pushed for a better deal from management to meet the cost of living. Staff from Sparsholt and Andover College, within the University and College Union, UCU, were striking from Monday to Wednesday of this week. The action follows a dispute and strikes in the summer, which saw the college group's management offer an 850 consolidated pay rise alongside one-off payments of £450. The proposal was rejected, with UCU members arguing the proposal was insufficient to meet rising costs. UCU branch chair and music technology teacher Nick Lindsay, who was manning the picket line, said, "We are very keen to avoid any disruption to students, but we want the best deal for staff and students." At a meeting ahead of the latest strike action, management put forward another payment deal, but this was also rejected in a ballot by the UCU members. A spokesperson for Sparsholt College Group management said, "We are saddened that an extremely small number of our staff members recently voted to reject the improved pay award."
Our final item is by Belgarum, an alternative look at the news, and is entitled Horseplay Down at the Pub. Following a pub's anger at a horse being brought onto the premises, a fellow Swanmore pub has made light of the situation with a horse of its own. Rainbow, the plastic horse, was carried inside by staff at the Hunter's Inn for a pint of Guinness. The horse had been stationed outside the pub since it reopened in August, but manager Angela Farmer thought it would help bring some cheer to bring him in and make light of the recent uninvited guest at rival pub, the Brickmakers in Swanmore. Angela said, "We just thought it would be a laugh to serve it a pint of Guinness and put the staff on there. We did it as a joke after what happened up the road and to bring the community together. Everything has got a bit serious, so we decided to bring our plastic horse in. We're still laughing about it now. We wanted to lighten up the mood. It's a new year and everyone has had a horrible time with COVID and the cost of living, and people just need to laugh. Meanwhile, the Brickmakers landlords, Corin and Gareth Blake, posted their disapproval of a horse being brought inside their pub on December the 29th. Mm. The post, which has since been removed, read, "Just to reiterate, we do not allow any animals or livestock in our pub. Apart from the complete ridiculousness of it and the poor horse's welfare, it's a health and safety issue." Staff from the Brickmakers also reinforced that children are not allowed at the venue after 7 p.m. Speaking on the reaction, the Hunter's Inn manager added, "They've got problems with kids, but we welcome families. It's a family pub at the end of the day. We have done really well since opening. Customers have supported us, and we all know them. It's a really nice atmosphere here, and we do have a laugh and a joke." Commenting on the pub's Facebook post of the colourful horse, Joan Watkins said, "Glad to see that there is one pub in Swanmore that welcomes horses." The pub shared that unlike Brickmakers, it's yet to see any real horses inside the venue. The Hunter's Pub reopened in the summer after closing in 2019 with its previous owners. And there are a couple of photographs here which show the Rainbow the horse. It's a full-size plastic horse. The reason it's called Rainbow because it's decorated in rainbow colours. And there was a photograph of one of the staff of the Hunter's Pub actually sitting on the back of the horse. So that's quite a fun thing. So remember, if you're going to Swanmore to have a drink, if you want to take your horse in, well, don't take a horse in either of them. But anyway, it was a nice story on which to end. That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Bye-bye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.